Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today, we are going to take a look at Jupiter's entrance into the sign of Gemini, which is not happening until the end of May. So it's a little bit early, but I figure why not? Let's take a look at Jupiter's entrance into Gemini. We'll say a few brief things about it, and then we'll take a look at your horoscopes. I feel like this is a fun thing to do going into the weekend, and it may give you some sense also of what Jupiter is carrying right now from the standpoint of its recent conjunction with Uranus as it moves from the space of Taurus into Gemini. Because one thing that we're not thinking about is the idea that Jupiter could be rolling out like a wave from this event and bringing the blessings, the expansion, the openings, the sudden unexpected changes into the next whole sign house of your birth chart. So we're going to look at that movement today and get a feel for what that might look like. Now, this is something we'll revisit in May's horoscopes. You know, Alex and I will probably break this down in greater depth in our monthly overview. Of course, closer to the time of Jupiter's entrance into Gemini, you know I'm going to be doing a bunch of videos about it then. So again, this is maybe a too early sneak preview, but I still think it will be fun and it'll sort of get us going in the right direction. So that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections. If you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear it. You can find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Promotion for the day. We are promoting, of course, a couple of things, as you guys know right now. One of them is our live talks. So if you take a look at that, we just finished the Uranus in Love talk. And we did Neptune in Love, Pluto in Love next month of May, on May 16th. I'm doing a talk on Neptune's entrance into Aries. And we're going to be talking about what that is like. It's a little bit more than a year away right now, but it's a good time to look at it as Neptune is culminating in the final degree of Pisces and turning retrograde. It's very close to the cusp of Aries. So we're going to sneak preview Neptune's movement into Aries in May. June, I'm doing a talk on the 12th house. And in July, we're going to sneak preview Uranus's movement into Gemini. So a couple of cool things coming up there. Also go over to the courses page. First year course, second year course, and horary course begin again in June. So those are new classes starting up. You can learn more about them by going to the course pages and checking them out. June 16th is the start of the new first year program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. This is the best place to start. It's a 1 year immersion into ancient Hellenistic astrology with an archetypal psychology twist, you might say. We blend and fuse archetypal psychological astrology with ancient Hellenistic astrology. Those are the two, you know, strongest pieces of my own background as an astrologer that you'll find in this program. It is a class specifically about Hellenistic astrology. There are 30 classes on the year. There is an interactive group forum discussion and breakout tutoring sessions with our staff. So it's a very well-structured and supported program, place where you can meet community and develop relationships, as well as find as much or as little support and depth as you're looking for, depending on your unique intentions. Some people go professional. Some people are taking the class because this is just your hobby. Whatever the case may be, the bottom you'll find early bird payment available till May 15th, early bird installment plan available till May 15th. After that, the prices go up. We do have all the way up until the program starts need-based tuition. You click on that, apply now. We have an automated program now where you can just enter the amount that you can afford and then we'll match you with a plan. So with that tuition assistance, that's for people who might be hurting a little bit financially right now and need a little help to make the program happen. We are very glad to offer that. We like to make sure nobody's priced out. Okay, so let's move on now. And by the way, at the end of today, if you stick around after, you'll hear me, there's a video that I've tagged on where I go into greater depth about the first year program if you want to learn more about it. Otherwise, you can always email us to info@nightlightastrology.com. Okay, so again, this is just kind of an informal sneak preview today. We have, I'm going to speed this up here just a touch. So the entrance of Jupiter into Gemini takes place right about here. Let's just watch it occur hour by hour. So we'll get to the exact hour that it happens. This is May 25th. And you'll see Jupiter enters that 0 degree Gemini marker. This is the evening central time of May 25th. So it's not until the very end of May that this is occurring. So again, we're out in front of this a ways, but I thought this would be fun. And I want to look at it today from the standpoint of the fact that Jupiter is moving into Gemini and a new whole sign house in our chart coming off from a major conjunction with Uranus. So it's like carrying the sort of shockwaves of this revolutionary moment, you might say. And so what does that mean when it moves from one house to another, carrying that vibration? That's what we're going to look at today. So in order to do that, I'm going to start with Aries. And I'm just going to give, these are not like, I have prepared zero notes today. I just thought this would be fun. And so anyway, this is kind of off the cuff, but let's look at it from the standpoint of having been in one house, hitting Uranus, going to the next. What might that mean? I recommend listening to this for your rising sign, as always, because that's going to correspond with the whole sign house version of your birth chart. If you like sun sign horoscopes, fine, no big deal. But this is where the whole sign house transits are actually occurring in your birth chart. So rising sign is usually king for people who like whole sign house astrology. Anyway, and that's the Hellenistic model anyway. All right, so Aries, you have had this breakthrough in house two. And let's just talk about that really quickly to refresh. That is the place of resources. So whether it's income and expenditures, whether it's possessions, whether it's skills and the acquisition or development of skills that act as a resource, the second house is about what you have, what's near you, what you're in possession of, what you're developing or cultivating that you can say is yours, or it may act as a valuable resource. So there's been some shifting there in the house of resources and opening and a kind of revolutionary impulse or expansion and sudden changes. Jupiter entering the third house is interesting because here you have Jupiter entering the sign of Gemini. This is Mercury, a Mercury ruled sign. And we are looking at it in terms of the, in the third house, often connected with the mind and learning, communication. And so Jupiter in this house, you're going to see a lot of Aries out there who suddenly have an emphasis on needing to speak and be heard for their ideas and voice to be valued and recognized. And I wonder if there hasn't been an emphasis on developing resources around mind, speech, intellect, technology, if there hasn't been an emphasis on something like learning and the cultivation of new skills through learning. That may continue with Jupiter moving out of the second house, where it focuses on an expansion of resources, and into the third, where suddenly there's an abundance of resources on the level of things like technology, the mind, learning, speech, communication, and so forth. And this can also be about something in the environment expanding, as the third house, broadly speaking, represents the environment of our day-to-day lives. And so with new resources comes a new kind of day-to-day activity list, or a different kind of space that you're occupying mentally. So I wonder about that as the connection between houses two to three for Aries. All right, so again, just kind of brief treatments here, but let's move on to Taurus. For Taurus, we're looking at this as Jupiter-Uranus coming from the first house, a place of identity, body, health, and our natural sense of who we are. So as a Taurus, you've been going through some significant changes for a while around your sense of identity. But what this is leading to is a kind of multiplication or amplification of your available resources as Jupiter now enters your second house. You have to be careful with Jupiter in the second of spending a lot of money, but also now there's more revenue streams available, or you're seeing an expansion of what you have or what you're in possession of. There could be multiple different kinds of things you are now developing or cultivating. New skills, learning, or education would follow with this one as well, because Jupiter in the second, in a Mercury ruled sign, can amplify what you're in possession of in terms of skills, knowledge, abilities, mercurial things. So I like this as a period coming up for Tauruses, where this personal revolution leads to maybe education, or it leads to skill development or acquisition. It leads to multiple new kinds of resources coming in. It also may lead to new understanding and skills that can be put to use and maybe bring in more money. So I like that. Be careful of, like, I would say, more expenditures or an emphasis on, like, maybe spending too much, for example. But nonetheless, it's a great pairing. So from personal revolution to a kind of revolution or growth of resources. All right, for Geminis, we have the Jupiter-Uranus energy coming out of the 12th house, which is really fascinating because that house was traditionally understood as a kind of blind spot. One thing I have to do really quick here. It was understood as a kind of blind spot, the 12th house was. So we don't always see things clearly that are in the 12th house. And when you've had something of a revolution in the 12th house, what is often happening is unconscious material has suddenly moved or shifted such that what you couldn't see, now you can. So when Jupiter comes into the first house out of the 12th, it is as though the opportunity for a kind of personal growth period, a personal period of expansion and personal development, greater wisdom and understanding, greater maturity, greater confidence is there, because there was a big shift in this kind of unconscious dimension of the chart recently. And then Jupiter comes right into the first house, where it's usually very welcome in terms of a process of becoming wiser and more confident and so forth. One thing that happens in the first house with Jupiter, you have to be a little bit careful of, is, you know, either getting high on yourself or developing an ego. Sometimes, like, honestly, like with health, like people can eat too much and kind of balloon out with Jupiter, which can kind of be problematic if you don't want to gain weight. But, you know, everyone's different. Jupiter coming out of the 12th, though, into the first, has the potential to be very empowering, as you are now coming into contact and greater understanding and greater wisdom about who you are, given an encounter with the unconscious that you just had, a kind of revolutionary awakening that took place in the house that is associated with the unconscious. And then Jupiter entering the first, granting you greater understanding and luminosity and maybe some degree of confidence. So I like the movement for Geminis. I think it's one of the most exciting horoscopes of all of them, because that 12th house place can be difficult, but then when Jupiter's going right into the first, it can serve as a kind of awakening. All right, let's go on to Cancers. So for Cancer, I think it's interesting that we're moving from the 11th into the 12th. The revolution was in the house of friends and allies and groups of people. And so you're coming off from a transit that has been bringing you out into new communities of people and connecting you with new allies and friends. And it's been maybe a shift in the kinds of people that you're connected with and how they are paired with some of your professional goals. You can see we've had eclipses in your 10th house as a Cancer. What's really interesting is that from that space, Jupiter's now going to go into the 12th house. I wonder if that doesn't mean that you are going to be doing some kind of work or learning in a 12th house environment, hospitals, rehab centers, places where people are suffering, charitable work. The world of the 12th house is often a world of serving those who are suffering. And so with the, kind of Jupiter-Uranus dynamic in the 11th, moving into the 12th, I can't help but wonder if some of the openings that have been happening in terms of groups, communities of people, and allies are going to open doors for you to go into spaces where some kind of selfless, sacrificial, compassionate, charitable work in places or environments where people are suffering might not come along with the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic. So the other thing would be that although there's been great openings around groups, communities, your career, in the next year, you may also you may have to look at some of the shadows of your career, of yourself, of groups of people, of religious and spiritual spaces, because we also have a Jupiter-Saturn square coming up to your 9th house. I wonder if in the next year you aren't going to have to get in touch with some of what you can't see, what you don't yet know or understand, and that this is going to come about as a matter of being connected to the kinds of people and groups you've been encountering, or the kinds of changes in your career that you've been encountering. The 12th house Jupiter is nice because it can be very redemptive in terms of the kind of learning that happens and the restoration of faith and understanding through encounters with shadows or through encounters with suffering. So I think this is where the revolution continues onward if you're a Cancer. All right. Let's go on to Leo. So for Leos, we are looking at the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic having moved through your 10th house, the place of career, public reputation, engagement with the greater world that you live in, even if you're retired. And then we have Jupiter moving into the 11th house, the place of groups, communities, allies, friends. And so it is as though the shift or revolutionary energy and currents coming through Jupiter-Uranus in the 10th is moving directly into some kind of expansion around groups of people, allies, friends, communities, that the awakening in career is now going to be bringing you into new communities, or maybe in Jupiter and Gemini, maybe multiple different communities. And that there's going to be an emphasis on allies, friends, groups of people, and I think networks of people that are connected to the kinds of breakthroughs that you've been having or trying to create in your career. That's what comes to my mind. You think about new kinds of people, new kinds of groups or connections or professional groups that you serve or work with. Could also be, again, that there's some connections to things like spirituality and religion. You've had eclipses in your 9th house. So I like this as a year where if you've been trying to redirect your sense of life purpose in the most personal sense, now the ramifications of the changes you've been making in the next year are going to spill over into greater communities and the kinds of people that are the right fit or not the right fit for the continued development of your ambitions. All right, so that's what I see for Leos. Let's go on to Virgos. For Virgos, the revolution of Jupiter-Uranus was right here in the 9th house, the place of the higher mind, of beliefs, religion, spirituality. And then we had Jupiter with it, and now Jupiter's coming into the 10th house. I've seen this so many times throughout my career when you have Jupiter move from the 9th to 10th, and now we have a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in the 9th moving into the 10th, where a person has been developing or growing in their knowledge, wisdom, faith, understanding, philosophy, beliefs. Maybe they've been studying something, a particular subject, and you move from the phase of being a student or you move from a phase of really forming or shaping a set of beliefs into the need for those beliefs to be enacted or expressed, maybe in your life path or career in a more public sense. So Jupiter moving from the 9th to the 10th in this way can bring a process of learning, study, faith, spiritual development, and it can kind of bootstrap it into a more professional expression. Or you might also see that because you've become more knowledgeable about something, you've been given greater authority or responsibility. But either way, you're going from a kind of a space of renaissance around the higher mind and beliefs and religion and spirituality and learning into a Jupiter year in your career house, which can offer multiple opportunities for growth and expansion and sometimes success, sometimes greater responsibility or authority, mastery. And so the two are really intimately connected is the point. You got a whole year of Jupiter being in that house, which is pretty nice. Like Jupiter 10th house years, I mean, sometimes we put too much on them. We think, oh, you know, overnight I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to earn 10 times as much money because Jupiter's in my 10th house. No, you know, but the opportunities for growth and expansion are usually going to present themselves throughout the year as Jupiter's in that 10th house. It's a good place. All right, let's move on. So now we have Libra and we're moving from the 8th to the 9th. So with the revolutionary impulse of Jupiter-Uranus having just taken place in the 8th house, a place of soul contracts with other people, and then Jupiter moving into the 9th house, this is a really interesting combination because the movement from 8 to 9 can be about the broadening of our mind and horizons that takes place after we have experienced a liberating event, a kind of death and rebirth event that came suddenly and was powerful and unexpected, but also tremendously liberating. And then suddenly we are opening our mind, we're asking new questions, we're open to learning something or traveling, or our spirituality is taking a big step forward in some way. So the eighth house Jupiter-Uranus dynamic is often about freeing us or liberating us from various soul contracts. Sometimes people pass away. Sometimes relationships end. Sometimes new things come into our life, resources that were completely unexpected and unavailable through new soul contracts with other people. Whatever the case may be, the emphasis on the eighth house Jupiter-Uranus now moving into the ninth with Jupiter in Gemini suggests that there's an expansion of knowledge, wisdom, faith, understanding, and expansion of horizons that's taking place because of the liberating effects of Jupiter-Uranus in the eighth, and the sort of sudden transformational dynamics that were just taking place in that house. That's a really interesting pairing for Librans. I feel like Librans have a theme of like spiritual death and rebirth in their horoscopes on that one. All right, Scorpios. Scorpios, we go from 7 to 8. So we can see that Jupiter and Uranus were just conjoined in the 7th, the place of love and relationships, partnerships, and then Jupiter moves directly into the 8th. Now, sometimes transits in the 7th and 8th may have more to do with a partner or a loved one than they do with yourself. So this could, for example, be a sign that some really big things have been shifting for a partner in their job or their work or their family or their health. And you may see that they're coming into a different set of resources because of new developments that have happened rather suddenly. So there's always that. I think more broadly speaking, though, the revolution in relationships and sexuality, the need for opening and expansion around love and relationships, is carrying over into a new set of resources that are becoming available. So, you know, when new people enter your life or leave your life, or when significant changes happen within relationships, one of the things that this would signify is that as a result, you're going to see an expansion or growth of what becomes available to you in and through those relationships and those people in your life. And so the growth in that area can come as a kind of unexpected blessing, that there's blessings coming through because of relationship revolutions that have taken place. So I like that one for Scorpios. That's nice. All right, let's move. Whoops. Let's move on to Sagittarius. So for Sag, we're moving from house 6 to 7, which is nice because the revolution in the 6th house is often a revolution born of a lot of work and a lot of effort over time. So you see a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in the 6th and you think to yourself, okay, maybe this person has experienced a breakthrough. This is a very basic Jupiter-Uranus signification, a breakthrough in a process that has been frustrating or challenging or difficult or that's required perseverance and sacrifice. That's a 6th house kind of process. You have Jupiter-Uranus in that house and you think, okay, this person, through effort, dedication, sacrifice, service, has probably had some kind of breakthrough. It could also be that there's been breakthroughs in health or so on and so forth. But what's nice about this is that if you think about Jupiter leaving that space and going into the 7th, the seventh house, which was called the place of the setting sun, and it was associated with the end of work and toil, because this is the place of the evening. And when the evening's done, when the evening comes, the work is done. Indian astrologers called the seventh house kama, which meant pleasure. So Jupiter entering the 7th, maybe moving Sagittarians from a space of greater work, effort, sacrifice, and a kind of intense process into a space that's more expansive, luxurious, sensual, and maybe romantic or enjoyable. I mean, that's one way of looking at it, because the seventh house, broadly speaking, you know, can just mean that there's a kind of enjoyment in the same way that, you know, the evening hours you relax. On the other hand, you know, I wonder what kinds of breakthroughs are leading to growth in relationships for Sagittarians right now. Like, what kinds of things have you worked through recently that are leading to healthier, positive new opportunities or people or experiences around love, sex, and relationships? So let's go on to Capricorn. For Caps, we have the Uranus dynamic happening in the 5th house, a place of pleasure, a place that is associated with how we enjoy. For Capricorns, the 5th house of pleasure is, you know, a place that can be difficult, because Capricorns, being Saturn ruled, you know, they can just plug away with a kind of workaholism, as you guys know, if you know any Capricorns. So what I like about Jupiter-Uranus in the fifth for Caps is that there's been such an emphasis on pleasure and creativity and a breakthrough around things that are more sensual. No less earthy, no less grounded, but more of an emphasis on pleasure. Does this feel good? You know, are you satisfied creatively, romantically? So the creative breakthroughs, the breakthroughs around pleasure, a kind of renaissance or revolution around sensuality, that's been in the air for Caps. What I find interesting is that Jupiter then moves into the sixth house. Okay, so there's a couple of different directions you can go with this. One would be if for any reasons Capricorns have been going way too far with the pleasure. Let's say the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic in the fifth has been about drinking too much or spending too much, or now, sometimes when we don't know how to have fun, we overcompensate. So if you've been going too far, Jupiter moving into the sixth, coming off from the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in the fifth, could mean that now you're going to be in a period of time where you're suffering due to the, you know, the sins of excess. And you could be in a period where the next whole year is about learning what moderation looks like, which is why Jupiter in the sixth is sort of like good but difficult. Good in terms of learning, you know, some really nice virtues like moderation and discernment and good judgment, but having to do so amidst turmoil and difficulty. And what would that turmoil and difficulty be? Well, coming off from Jupiter Uranus in the fifth, it might be an inability to control your pleasure impulse. Why? Because maybe you don't give yourself enough regularly enough so that when it is time for pleasure, you just go too far too fast, right? So it's that kind of thing. On the other hand, you could think about this as Jupiter-Uranus coming together in the fifth is like a creative breakthrough, and the Jupiter in the sixth house then speaks to the need for a process of sacrifice, work, and labor for the creative breakthrough to be carried to the finish line. For example, I'm going to write a book. Okay, great. Well, you're going to have to sacrifice and sit down and write every day to get that book done. So I wonder about a creative opus, like a creative work for Capricorns that's coming through right now as maybe another really positive signification. But either way, I wonder what Capricorns are going to be working for, sacrificing for, because you believe in it, because you really deeply believe in it. That's also Jupiter in the sixth. What you believe in, you are willing to work and serve. So let's move on. We'll go to Aquarius. So Aquarius, we get the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic in the fourth. And you're thinking there about revolution in the roots, family, home, parental karma, living environment. And you're thinking about a moment of greater breakthrough that's been happening over the course of maybe the past year even. With Jupiter going into the fifth, coming off from that, what's really interesting is that the fifth house was sometimes talked about as the resources or what the family and parents and so forth were in possession of. So there's a way in which if, like, let's just say, for example, that you buy property with Jupiter Uranus in the fourth house because you think it'll help loosen up your budget. In the fifth house, it could actually mean that you're going to see the profits from a piece of property, right? So what changes have you made around home, family, living environment? And then just broadly speaking, over the course of the next year, Jupiter in the fifth, which is like the second to the fourth, can bring in benefits and acquisition and resources from the changes that you've made. So even just happiness with fifth house signification, let's say you build a deck on, you know, you spend a little money, you build a deck because you're looking to revolutionize your home and, you know, have greater pleasure around your home. So you build a deck. Jupiter in the fifth, in a very basic way, can just mean that now you're enjoying it for a year. Like you're reaping what's been sown and there's greater pleasure around home and family because you built a deck. So you're thinking about the blessings, the benefits, the enjoyment, the pleasure, the possibilities for a greater sense of creative fulfillment or happiness coming in relation to things that have taken place and changed around home and family. Also, Jupiter in the fifth house can be great when it comes to like getting pregnant or having kids or a big year of growth and achievement for your children if you have them. So those are other things that come to mind. But revolution at the roots and how it is conducive to greater happiness. All right. And then last but not least, we have Pisces. And that means that we have had the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic in the third, with Jupiter then carrying over into the fourth. So Jupiter-Uranus in the third is about revolution in the environment. So the greater, the environment of the third house is like, how can I describe it? If you have a, let's say you're a plant in a garden, right? The third house, the place where you have your roots, you know, your little place in the garden is the fourth house. But if you think about the third house to the plant, it's the rest of the entire bed that it's planted in, and all of its neighbors, and the, you know, the quality of the soil and the way the light hits all the other parts of the bed that it's in, right? This is why I always use the fish tank image as well, because you might be the fish under a little rock, but the rest of the tank and the environment of the tank is the third house. And this is like the psychic environment of our lives, the cultural environment of our lives, the familial influence and how it's spread out and creates a kind of karmic ecology around us. That's the third, which is why it's so difficult to sort of talk about the third house. When you have had Jupiter Uranus in the third, the environment psychically, emotionally, sometimes physically has been transformed. There's a desire or a need or an impulse for new things to be established in the environment, emotionally, mentally, physically, etc. Now, coming off from that, Jupiter's then entering the fourth house and expanding the base, or bringing growth and change and new opportunities to the base, to the actual place that you live. Because there's been changes in the environment, you might find that there's greater happiness at home. Or because there's been changes in the environment, you find that you have to also now make changes around your actual more immediate living environment. Changes in the environment reflect new kinds of people, places, and activities happening around home and family. So the connection between the environment you live in and your home this year, your parents and your family karma, your ancestral legacy, those are a big deal. Also, the way you're differentiating yourself from your family, because you have Saturn and Jupiter squaring from the first to the fourth all year, that's a big deal too. You think about growth around home, family, and environment, but it's also coming as you're trying to distinguish what you want and what you don't want, what you identify with and what you don't. So big stuff there for Pisces. All right, anyway, this was a fun way to spend a Friday. Like, I hope that this just, you know, takes you into the weekend and gives you some fun things to consider for this big Jupiter transit coming up. But I thought the interesting approach would really be to look at what it means that it's coming from one house and going to another. So, and I didn't want to think too much. I just kind of wanted to do it off the cuff. So today I didn't have any notes. I hope that impromptu was not, it was still like intelligible. So anyway, stick around after I sign off. You can learn more about the upcoming first year program. I'd love to study with you guys. Look, studying when Jupiter goes into Gemini, studying astrology. Remember that ancient astrology was called the system and science of Hermes. Hermes is Mercury. So Jupiter in a Mercury ruled sign. I still remember the last time Jupiter was in Gemini. It was one of the most classic nightlight sections I've ever had because of how much magic occurs when Jupiter is in Gemini. It really is like the magician from the tarot. That, along with Pluto in Aquarius coming off a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. I don't always say this, but it's a particularly good time to study astrology. When Jupiter is in that sign of Gemini, it's the openness that the mind is going to have to the kinds of mercurial philosophical connections that the entire ancient language of astrology is built on is just phenomenal. So anyway, consider it. Check out the course. I hope to see you guys there. You have need-based tuition. If it will help you a little bit, be sure to check that out. And we will see you again next week. Bye, everyone.
Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year, These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends, but if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, not unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition. Rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good, you're learning to improvise. Which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, you know, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session, and then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2,000-year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.